We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humour of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Greetings, my public.
Interruptions from John Wells as Prodnose.
What is all this?
Be gone, you oaf.
And Patricia Routledge and John Sessions as several red-bearded dwarfs, amongst others. Beachcomber by the Way.
Good day to you. The literary world is fizzing with excitement. The third volume in the Wessex Cabman series is published today. And of all the volumes of Wessex Cabman published to date, I am not being in any way dishonest when I say this is most definitely the third one so far. After the runaway success of the lists of Huntingdonshire Cabman, it is encouraging that in an age devoted to pleasure-seeking and cheap sensation, the public can still appreciate the subtler merits of an exhaustive list of cabmen's names. However, an attempt has been made in this new volume to counteract any tendency to dullness by abandoning the usual alphabetical order. Thus, it is with a pleasant shock of surprise that one finds on page 231 Jelf E.N., followed by Gumble R.S.J. and Dullfoot N.M. Senior. Such happy juxtapositions as this stimulate the interest of the reader and give a semblance of narrative to what the undiscerning might call a mere catalogue of names.
Let me see this book. But it's a mere catalogue of names.
Indeed.
I don't understand the fascination for these cabmen's names at all.
Really, that does not surprise me. Listen. Crab K.V. Pinchwater Arthur. Monts Graham. Flitch O. Gibbering W.R.C. Robinson B.L. Robinson E.T. Prout V. Garrison X. Sladder T.W.M.
That's enough. I still don't get it.
No. The juxtaposition of the two Robinsons is a masterpiece of style. Possibly not quite as memorable as the amazing Baines H. Baines L.T. of Volume 2, but pretty close. Are you not moved?
No.
You will be. Get out, Philistine.
Ah!
And now to more down-to-earth matters. Life at Bolton Wynfever's. The Memoirs of a Serving Man. By Travers, Butler to the Peerage.
Hello. I well remember one summer when my master, Lord Shortcake, decided to obtain the services of a private tutor to enhance the education of his somewhat wayward and less than academically able nephew, Mortimer. Both my master and Lady Shortcake were particularly impressed by one applicant for the post, a Captain de Courcy Farinough, who came with a letter of very strong recommendation from Dr. Smart Alec of Narcova. It was my duty to show the captain into the library at Bolton Wynfever's for the final interview. There he found my master, a decanter and two glasses, by his side.
A sight for sore eyes.
My master, fooled by the captain's easy manner, assumed he must be one of the many guests invited to the manor, and the two continued to drink in peace for well over an hour, until my mistress, Lady Shortcake, came in to inquire whether the captain's services had been retained.
Ah, hello, my dear.
Shortcake, has the, matter been settled?
Still under discussion, you might say.
Don't delay any more than is necessary.
Tell me, who any idea what matter she was referring to?
Oh, beat me.
Me too, but I'm sure there was something she wanted me to do this afternoon.
More sherry, unless you're in a hurry to go.
Oh, no.
Oh, for heaven's sake, we're still discussing it.
Discussing what? And who are you?
Ah, this is my nephew, Mortimer.
Shut up!
Don't put your tongue out against Clem. Ah, we are getting a tutor for him, the army chap. Can't do better than that,
Really? Sounds a splendid idea.
Yes. Run along, Clem. Plenty of things for you to break outside, huh?
What makes you think I'd want to stay in here anyway?
Look out for that.
Oh, Lord.
Only an old vase, the decanter said. After the passing of four more hours and the imminent approach of dinner, my mistress, Lady Shortcake, once again knocked on the library door, believing that by now the new tutor should have either landed the job, in which case there would be need of an extra place at table, or taken his leave. The knock was, however, drowned in roars of laughter.
What, may I ask, is going on here?
She was met by the sight of my dear old master standing on his right leg in the middle of the room, whilst attempting to curl his right arm round his left leg. The captain, meanwhile, was kneeling near him with both elbows pointed outwards and his hands clasped behind his neck. He was trying to pick up a penny from the carpet with his mouth. Sadly, my master's balance had never been particularly good.
Well, I'm waiting for an answer.
My dear, this is the new level for our tutor.
Shorty, you're drunk. And take that waste paper basket off your head.
Oh, sorry.
You, Far Enough, what's all this about?
Lord Scorchcake wished to test my perspicacity for kitchen boy.
Going by that empty decanter, I think we're all aware of your capacity. I expect to see you both sobered up by dinner.
She needs marinating.
While the meal was prepared, Captain Foul Enough's luggage was brought up from the station, and during dinner, Lady Shortcake attempted to learn under what terms, if any, the captain had been engaged as tutor, if at all.
Shorty.
Yes, Major?
You do remember why we asked Captain Foul Enough here, don't you?
Do I?
As potential tutor for young Mortimer.
Really? And the guests are already. Well, blow me that a juice of a coincidence, Foul Enough.
I knew you should have left this to me.
Sorry,
tell me, Captain, what could you teach our nephew?
There's, the classics.
The classics can come later. I thought we'd taken that boy's last catapult.
Well,
Mortimer! You pay for that! And why aren't you in bed?
Yeah.
Possibly discipline would be a better starting point.
The next day, my master and Captain Foul Enough spent talking and drinking with what seemed to be only casual references to the business of the captain's engagement. It was my job, every now and then, to fight my way through the smoke caused by Mortimer burning old books in the library to replenish the decanter. After four further days of this, both my master's cellar and my mistress's patience were considerably deplenished.
Shorty, I must know, dear.
Yes, you must, dear. Cannonball in the 3:30 and Rex the Richard in the 4:15.
Please put that racing paper down, Shorty, and give me your full attention.
Sorry, my dear, but Far Enough gave me some tips.
Which is more than he's done for Mortimer. He's been here for 5 days now.
Yeah.
Is he or is he not going to tutor the boy?
Well, we mustn't rush him, my sweet. At all, Mortimer isn't a very attractive proposition. What do you think of Captain Foul Enough? Seems capable, what?
As a drinker, he seems to know his job.
Mm-hmm.
His stories are vulgar and absurd,
mm-hmm.
and his manners seem to me to be too flashy.
Mm.
He has all the makings of a top-class scoundrel.
Yes, but apart from that, my dove, not a bad chap, eh?
Shorty, I want you to sort this out now, once and for all.
Mm.
You hear me?
Yes, my sweet. So can half the county, I imagine.
The captain was at that moment ensconced in the library with a bottle of my master's finest port and the telephone, his conversation on which instrument I had inadvertently stumbled across whilst polishing finger marks from the extension in the adjoining room.
I must admit, Smart Alec, it's not going too badly. All I have to do is to keep postponing a definite answer about the tutoring job until the supply of drink gets dangerously low. Probably not much longer now. Still, at the moment, it's a free holiday, and the grub is good. Oops. Excuse me, someone's coming.
Ah, there you are.
Ah, Lord Shortcake, how wonderful to see you after all this port. A time.
Listen, Sharp, I'm not going to pressure you or anything, but Lady Shortcake and I were wondering if this business of tutoring young Mortimer could be, how shall I put it, settled.
Yes. Oh, yes, of course, yes. By the way, this is first-rate form. Have you much of it?
Very little left. Very little of anything left. Whiskey, sherry, all gone.
You know, I really don't think that boy Mortimer takes to me. You know?
No?
No, no. No, this is hardly the job for me, perhaps.
Ah, what is it, Travers?
Sorry to interrupt, Your Lordship, but the new supplies have arrived from the wine merchant.
Yeah.
I did say perhaps, Lord Shortcake. Mustn't decide these things hot-headedly. Give me a day or two to study young Mortimer. Yeah. And listen, I'll tell you what. I'll even help Travers here load the cellar.
Oh, make
myself useful, eh? Come on, up and at him, that's what I say. 10 green bottles.
And so passed another week. My mistress, always more cunning than my somewhat absent-minded master, began to form the suspicion that the excellent cellar at Shortcake Manor was colouring the captain's judgment, and one evening arranged that only very weak beer was served at dinner that night. By the main course, it was apparent that the captain had decided to leave. Indeed, to add to the deception, Lord Shortcake was even heard to announce...
Sunday there's nothing to drink, Captain. This is all there'll be for some weeks now.
Yes.
Filthy stuff, I'm afraid.
And by breakfast the next day, Captain Foulenough had gone. At lunchtime, my master's words of the evening before suddenly became prophetically true.
Good Lord. There is nothing to drink. My cellar's been cleared out. All the best bottles are finished. He must have taken them with him. The scoundrel!
Well, let that be a lesson to you, Shorty. It's just a pity that he couldn't teach young Mortimer anything.
Lady Shortcake was not to discover until later how inaccurate had been her assessment of the captain's educational prowess.
A lovely drop of stuff. Watch this! Down in one! Yo! What a good vintage. Only 17 bottles of the 36 left, but the case of 34 should be good, especially when mixed with a Cointreau.
Ah, happy days and golden memories. Until the next time...
More news of Dr. Strabismus, whom God preserve of Utrecht. The doctor tried some time ago to popularize a new method of catching herring. The idea was for divers to press them down to the floor of the ocean with bits of board, and then drive them into a kind of compound or underwater stockade. Here they would starve to death, and then other relays of divers would go down and pick them up.
But surely a fish that had starved to death wouldn't be worth eating.
Indeed not. The idea was to supply them to all the owners of expensive West End restaurants who live in fear of accidentally giving their customers value for money.
Oh, piffle.
Talking of fish reminds me of the doctor's famous experiment at Western Supermare. He caught a plaice, tamed it, and kept it under observation. Every day he took it for a walk on the end of a string. The creature became quite used to the dry land and began to grow eyebrows. But one day the inevitable happened. The string broke, the fish fell off the pier into the sea, and having forgotten how to swim, was drowned instantaneously.
Oh, how tragic.
Yes. However, there are so few entertainments provided for our aquatic cousins nowadays. Maybe this song will bring a smile to a lonely bloater's face, or tickle the fancy of some melancholic gudgeon. It concerns not fish exactly, but a young girl with similar drinking habits. She drank without thinking whatever she got. They mixed it and shook it, she swallowed the lot. There wasn't a cocktail the girl wouldn't swill, and only the foulest could make her feel ill. She drank without caring the beastliest muck, with a cry of no heel taps or jolly good luck. From party to party they dragged her with pride. She lasted 3 months and then suddenly died.
Busy, I see.
Chasm, I hear.
Well, if you're merely going to insult me, I will go out again.
In that case, you'd better stay.
Really?
Yes, because I was hoping to kick you as well. But first, more entries from my dictionary for today.
Oh,
the very letter O for Odyssey. When a popular hostess makes a trip to the continent, it is called an Odyssey. Old Master. Any picture painted by a long-dead artist for which an American collector is prepared to pay over the odds.
What all?
Open-minded. Empty-minded.
Tosh.
Opposition. Keeping up the game of parliamentary government.
Ham.
Order. Point of. An excuse for a riot at a public meeting.
Clap. Crap.
And lastly, noise made by irritating sluggard when ejected from room. Here. If only all the definitions were so enjoyable to prove. However, let us hurry on. More news, hot in. Strange footprints in the corridors of the government department are said to belong to abominable yes-men. Proof, if proof were needed, that none of them are legendary figures or ever will be. Moving on. Here's something that will appeal to you. What fun it would be if we all talked like the advertisements.
Cynthia, good morning. Is your health A1?
Oh, Charles. Yes, thank you. I have just returned from a glamorous itinerary in the SS Deleterium, a deluxe leviathan of the deep, beside which the pomp of Sheba's queen would have seemed but so much dross.
How nice. Cigarette. Old coal hole, extra tart. Surgeons recommend them.
Is it made from the purest selected leaf, picked and dried by special experts? Is its fragrance a delight? Does it cure whooping cough?
No doubt. There is 10 years of health, wealth, and prosperity in every packet. If you collect only 3 million coupons by next Monday...
Then give me 2. I must tell my niece of this super smoke.
Here. Mrs. Bouge, a sufferer from cramp for 6 years, was playing polo after the first puff. The second puff was the one that caused all the trouble.
Well, good morning. I must now go and buy for my husband Barrington's Chin Loss Wonder, the only razor that shaves you in 30 seconds without handle, blade, soap, or brush.
I must get one at once.
I know that razor well. Scientists invented it so that advertising copywriters, after reading the fruits of their labors, wouldn't be able to slash their wrists. And now, on with the true business of the day. The annual attempt to induce Mrs. Wretch, the former high-wire siren of the Sawdust Ring, to return to her first love and do a short Christmas season with Wugwell Circus is in full swing. Mrs. Wretch is now the wife of the eminently respectable Colonel Wretch, who swore at the time of their union to take her away from all that. Sadly, he seems powerless to prevent all that from following her at an indiscreet distance. Yesterday, Wugwell himself called at Wretch Manor to put his proposition to Colonel Wretch.
What is it you want, Wugwell? I'm a busy man.
Oh, I thought you was retired, Colonel Wretch.
Yes, and more occupied with life's burdens now than I ever was.
Well, of course you were an officer after all.
Now, look here, Wugwell, if you just came here to insult me...
No, matey. I merely come here to ask for the loan of your most talented missus, you know, only for the Christmas season. Not all Wugwell needs her.
You did come here to insult me.
No, I don't.
The maid will show you out.
No, but Colonel, this isn't fair. I mean, you shouldn't see this side. I mean, he's our demo. Democratic day.
Not democratic enough for any wife of mine to go round the ring with her feet on 2 horses' back.
Well, just the 1 horse, then.
Out!
I mean, look here, Colonel. Would it surprise you to know that, for instance, the lady who balances the glass of port on the seal's nose is, in fact, the cousin of a baronet?
Nothing surprises me nowadays, you sharabank creature. It merely disgusts me.
But all I wanted to do is just jump through a burning hoop and then get sprayed with ink by the clown Anselmo.
Is that all? Why not have her wrestle pythons with Batista the Snake Woman? Assist Lo Fung the Human Wheel wheelbarrow and transporting beer barrels. Mm. Or Titan spokes for Subtle Digger the Demon Cycle.
Yeah, yes. They're all very good ideas. I never realized you had such a grasp of circusry.
Get out!
Let me remind you, Sporty Guts, that your lady wife began life by handing our ape the bell to ring for its dinner.
Out! Out! Out!
All right, I'm going.
And get that bearded lady off my croquet lawn.
With Wugwell gone, calm descended once more upon Rich Manor. The colonel, busier than ever, passed the hours dozing in his study with a copy of Horse, Gun and Rod in his lap, and his good lady wife threw herself into managing the household. Wugwell, however, had gone, but not forgotten. Mrs. Rich was one morning cutting a recipe for turnip omelette out of a newspaper when the maid entered.
The circus is here to see you, madame.
The circus?
Yes, madame. Mr. Wugwell and Selmore the clone, the Philfiston trio, and 12 red-bearded dwarfs. I'm afraid I didn't get all their names, madame, but they're waiting in the drawing room.
All of them?
Well, they are very small dwarfs, madame.
No animals, I hope.
I wouldn't like to say, madame, but one of the dwarfs was a bit free with his hands.
Oh, dear. That'll be all, Maria.
I hope so, madame.
Mindful of the unsuspecting colonel dozing upstairs, the lady of the manor hurried across the hall to the drawing room. Sounds of revelry were already coming from behind its door.
This cannot go on. The colonel is my life now. The sawdust, the lights, my colourful compatriots of the ring. I left them all behind when I married. Apart from those pygmies that hid in our honeymoon luggage. No, there can be no going back. That chapter is closed. Be firm, Arthur. Be firm.
Mr. Wadwell!
My dear Mrs. Rich, allow me to...
To what do I owe the pleasure?
Oh, no!
Oh, gracious!
I'm afraid you gave him the circus cue by mistake.
Oh,
they're trained to go wild on hearing the word pleasure. Oh, put that down there, although it's bound to be valuable!
The scene in the drawing room was one of bedlam. The dwarfs ran over and under the furniture, waving their nondescript hats in the air. The filthy stand trio put on an artistic display of seesaw, using a loose bookshelf instead of their usual plank. And Selmo the clown juggled plates and produced a large Union Jack from a clock. And they all cheered lustily at the joy of having their old circus confederate amongst them once more. Unfortunately, the cheering woke the dozing colonel and brought him swiftly to the drawing room.
What the devil is going on in my house?
I can explain, dear, I think.
You'll stay out of this, huh?
Oh.
Now, Wugwell, do tell me, to what do I owe this pleasure? Cease this revelry! Stop this noise at once! Stop it! Quiet! Quiet! Damn you. Now perhaps it would be safer if you gave me an explanation. Ada! Ada, where is that woman?
Good morning, Colonel Rich, isn't it?
Who the deuce are you?
Emily Meadowburn, giggling Parva Rural District Council. Couldn't help noticing there seems to be some sort of unlicensed public performance taking place here in direct contravention of the theatres, music halls, funfairs and puppet booths, brackets, Punch and Judy, close brackets, Act of 1932. A most serious matter. Now, if I could just have the names... Wugwell, isn't it?
Yes, Scarper, lads. This is one booking we can do without.
In a trice, the room was cleared of circus performers, and the colonel stood there alone with just his thoughts and the officious Mrs. Meadowburn from the council. Or did he?
Look here, Mrs. Meadowburn. I suppose you're duty-bound to follow this up. But couldn't we just forget the whole thing?
Nothing would give me greater pleasure. My dear.
Goodness.
Now, if you could just help me off with this wig. I haven't worn it since the village play last Christmas.
Arthur, it's you.
Of course it's me. I wasn't without a certain amount of acting talent, my sweet.
Remember those weeks at Wagwell's as Madame Tambourina, the exotic empress of the Near East?
I'd rather not, if you don't mind.
Oh, dear.
The Colonel gazed deeply and lovingly into his wife's beautiful eyes, and though he affected disgust at her circus past, in his heart he forgave and even admired her for it. They stood there in the drawing-room like young lovers, aware of nothing in the world except their own entwined destinies. Least of all the dwarf, still trapped in the chimney, who had overheard their every word. I have just read a most unlikely story about a man who, having missed a train by seconds, was pleasantly surprised to see it stop and come back for him. There's only one possible explanation.
Which is?
He had a return ticket.
Is that the best you can do?
No, but why waste the good stuff on such a vile audience? Talking of things locomotive reminds me of a girl I knew who used to take a train out with her when she went for a walk. She said it was better company than a dog. Finally, however, the engine driver refused to go on with the foolery unless she married him.
She agreed, I suppose.
Oh, yes, but the ceremony was a shambles. The bride turned up half an hour late for the ceremony with the excuse that her wedding dress had taken longer than expected to arrive. The veil was there on schedule, but apparently the train was delayed.
Very amusing.
Yes, it was. It's not every girl that gets married with a 7:13 from crew following her up the aisle. The bridesmaids travelled in the guard's van, waving bouquets of red roses in the shape of flags. The groom alone thought the whole situation ridiculous. After their marriage, he gave her a dog, sold the engine, and converted the carriages into a bungalow. The last I heard, she was trying to teach the dog to whistle in tunnels, but without much success. A far more successful mimic was that juvenile siren of the shunting yard, little Miss Alma Brent. From miles around, people came to listen in wonder to her staggering repertory of steam engine and rolling stock sounds. Most of them, no doubt, wondered why she bothered, but her achievements were no less impressive for it.
I knew a child called Alma Brent, completely destitute of brains, whose principal accomplishment was imitating railway trains. When ladies called at Sunnyside, Mama, to keep the party clean, would say with pardonable pride, "Now, Alma, do the 6:15. The child would grunt and snort and puff with weird contortions of the face, and when the guests had had enough, she'd cease with one last wild grimace. One day her jovial Uncle Paul cried, "Come on, Alma, do your worst," and challenged us before them all. She did the 4:19 and burst.
Well, that's enough quality broadcasting for now. Next week, some other poor sap can struggle to wrest a smile from the bovine masses. I'm taking a holiday.
Oh, finally run out of supposedly amusing things to say, eh?
For the moment. But one thing brings me great comfort.
Oh, what's that?
I can still get laughs with slapstick. Allow me to demonstrate. Never fails. Till next time, goodbye.
That was Beachcomber, by the way. Adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. Patricia Routledge, John Sessions, and John Wells played the other characters. Your announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson. And some late news just in. Rear Admiral Sir Ewart Hodgson, speaking on behalf of the Maritime Forces, announced today a crackdown on naval discipline. From now on, all serving sailors will be expected to wear full uniform when eating saltwater fish.